And welcome to another episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am Triforce Todd, and joining me today is Wario Will.
You know the thing I've been noticing it in Splatoon 2 lately.
Oh boy!
Nobody likes clam blitz. I've noticed, and the people I've teamed up with so far, low level six, level 16. Yeah, I'm getting the feeling nobody likes clam blitz.
And tell us, Tyler.
Yeah, I gotta jump into Clam Blitz. I haven't tried that one yet. I really enjoy Turf War so much that I haven't played ranked in a long, long time.
It's I don't know. Like, when I tried it, like, yeah, you first have to gather up clams to go and make yourself a football, and then break the shield, then throw all your clams into the in the basket. It's a weird mode, and a lot of people don't seem to really get the mode. It's like, okay, try to go rush it, and nobody gets it. That's what I've been noticing in what I played today.
On that note, let's get us all started with, what have you been playing? I'll go first, because I had a busy weekend. I have only played Fae, which I'll get to in a second, so I was not able to play Splatoon 2 in the Splatfest. That soccer totally won in the popularity vote. It's okay. But no, I didn't get to play that, but I was at C2E2, the Chicago Comic Con, had a great time, and I'm happy to say that Nintendo was very well represented. I saw a complete family of Mario characters.
Nice.
So in one shot, it was this group of people. We had Mario, Luigi, Wario, Waluigi, Princess Peach, and Tyler, Daisy.
Yeah, of course.
I'm just joking. Daisy wasn't there at all. Ha!
Oh, darn it.
Everyone else
huge,
was there. It was
huge
actually
oversight.
Rather impressive. It was rather impressive. Oh, but easily the one of the best Nintendo cosplays I saw was someone made a Bowser and then wrapped themselves in the Koopa Clown car.
Oh.
Like, it was
that's
like
cool.
Detachable too. It was crazy. I've never seen a Koopa Clown car before in live action. So that was pretty cool. I saw multiple Princess Peaches. Oh, I saw a Zero. Like a dang good Zero from Mega Man.
Ooh.
And he was, I got his picture as he was like, he grabbed a beer and he's like, do you want me to put it down? I'm like, no, Zero needs a beer. He fights Mavericks all day. What do you want? but yeah, lots of great Nintendo cosplays. So, and I know I missed a lot, I'm sure. I keep seeing pictures from the C2E2 Facebook group and I'm like, how did I miss those characters? I was walking all over the con. So yeah, I'm happy to say Nintendo was represented well. As for Fire Emblem Heroes, we just got the new Athracia 776 banner, and I guess the gods just decided to take pity on me, and it's early morning, I go into the group, I'm like, okay, let's just get this over with. So I do free summon, the pool comes up, I have two reds, two colorless, and a blue. I'm like, that's pretty good. So I do a red, I get Leaf. Right off the bat, I mean, just as if I had planned it. And I'm like, okay, I'm digging this, so let's just keep going. So I do another red, I get Melkorn. I'm like, that's fine, let's just keep going. So I go to the colorless, and I get Nana. 2 5-stars from the banner in 3 summons. Heck yeah.
That is beautiful. That is a beautiful thing.
Nice.
It's truly payback for what happened to me the last time where I spent, like, you know, 200 some odd orbs just to get, like, Sanaki and Ike when I didn't need them! All I wanted was Bravelin! Was that so wrong? Apparently so. So
the numbers do, like, they tend to work out over time, but yeah. Sometimes they don't, but usually so, you'll get rewarded if you got hosed.
The RNGesus is kind
of. Yeah, indeed. And then, like, the ironic thing, of course, is that because I summoned, you know, 2 of the 4 characters, and technically the only 2 that I wanted, because I already got a Reinhardt who's a boss, and I technically don't need Olwen, sorry. So I was just like, let's just stop summoning, and then I looked back at my orb total. I still got 230 orbs.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So whenever there's, like, new Legends banner, or, like, maybe another big banner comes out, I'll be ready. I will be so ready.
Well, if you looked at the event calendar, they have Golden Week, whatever that means, coming up.
That's a Japanese holiday, basically, a consecutive Japanese holiday that's only in Japan right now. But yeah, that's what they're celebrating.
Okay. So, I figured they'll do some cool stuff for that, so you might get some
we'll see.
Some good banners to spend on.
But needless to say, I am I am content with summoned. It's about dang time, RNG gods. And then, like, next time I'll be wasting, like, all 200 orbs and get nothing. Although, I will say, and we're going to talk about this in the news, I am so happy that they finally moved some of those 5-star characters to 4-star and 3-star.
Yes, absolutely.
We talked about this, like, in umpteenth episodes ago about how you could get the same character in 4-star and 5-star, which made no sense to me. And I've gotten them. We've all gotten them so many times. And it's just like, get them out. And so now they're gone. Only the pure 5-stars remain. So hopefully at least this leads to, you know, better stuff for all of us. So, yeah.
Mm-mm-mm-mm. I guess I'll take this side, my turn. For me, as I said earlier, beginning, I have been playing back on Splatoon 2 and actually going back to my rank matches. And as I said before, I don't know why is it that people don't really get about clan blitz. Maybe there's just a whole lot of kids, low level players who just don't really care. Yeah, I've been seeing, and people just really do not know how to play or don't care about clan blitz. Everything else, like, yeah, Splat Zones, Rainmakers, those modes are fun, to say the least. But everything else is like, bleh. Blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, I don't know. I really wanted to, like, rank up in clan blitz. I'm only my C-minus rank, but people just don't seem to care, in my opinion.
Maybe you just haven't had good luck with your teammates. You never played with me, so.
perhaps that, yeah. And also, on the other system sides, I have actually been going back to Overwatch because if anyone has known, the new Overwatch event is happening right now, Retribution, where it basically explains Blackwatch, which with Genji, Reaper, McCree, and Moira. And gotta say, like, this mode is a lot more fun than, like, the previous modes they have shown so far, like Retribution. Was it Retribution? Or the one with, what was it? Tracer's first mission? Yeah, it's, like, this one is, like, much more action-oriented-based and just want to, like, get in, get out, and explain so much of the lore. I really like it, especially Matt Mercer's performance with McCree. Like,
is that ever going to come to Switch? Like, really, you think about it, Diablo was rumored a while ago, and it's sort of gone silent. Like, I still expect that to come, but the Overwatch hype, which was, like, you know, it was a pretty big deal last year, has kind of vanished into nothing.
It's definitely still up in the air, but I really want to hold my breath on it until we get confirmation of it's off Nintendo's online service slots first. So I guess they're kind of waiting for that detail right now. That's my theory. But overall, like, I'm playing Overwatch. I actually got my first legendary skin, a pajama. great pun, Overwatch. And overall, yeah, there's only been one pack of Faye. And first things first, I'm glad Kagura won the voting gauntlet, so yay! Go plot, team plot!
you were on Team Camilla, so, you know, you gotta
yes. I was originally on Team Camilla, but again, we lost, and then, okay, I switched to plot. So yeah, as long as the team plot wins, I do not care.
Yeah, Kagura, I'm glad that she won. I ended up joining. I was Team Crom, of course. I'm always Team Crom. Crom has been in, like, every voting gauntlet. Every single one, right?
Right.
He's been in, like, 4 voting gauntlets out of the 12. Like, it's ridiculous. He feels like he's always there. And I always pick him. And we won the first round and lost the second, tragically, to Lucina. And then I joined Team Lucina, which also lost. But, yeah, it was cool that Kagura won. Because, I mean, she's not a main character. So I'm glad to see a non-main character win. I do think that recency bias was a big deal.
Right. I kind of believe that as well. Like, everyone wants the new character. I mean, yeah. It was Buddy Camilla, and then, yeah, time for the new heroine to go in the spotlight.
Right. Kagero had a bigger team than Camilla, which is, you know, I mean, their popularity-wise, they're not even close. Camilla's way more popular. So I think she benefited from...
I don't know,
from...
they're kind of even to be honest.
Look at the polls. Look at the Choose Your Legend poll for proof. Camilla's way more popular than Kagero, but...
It's true.
Yeah, Kagura had a bigger team because she's the newer character.
And plus, heck, her unit itself, which I'm still having hard luck trying to summon her.
our dear friend Kromcho actually got her recently.
Nani!
Yeah. I guess you could say when it comes to winning the gauntlet, it's good that she had a better outfit.
Nice.
Thank you.
Hey,
don't get mad at her. She's been, like, struggling to try and get her, and finally she got her. So it's not like it's not like me when I got Leaf and Nana. It was like, oh, look at that, I've already got them. She struggled. She was fighting for Kagura, and she finally got rewarded.
RNG gods, please, I beg of you.
You can't play that card. You can't. You've gotten so many 5-stars. You can't play that card. I could play that card.
I've been playing Fire Emblem Heroes as well, and I'm on a down luck right now. Unlike Todd, I want to get like every character, which I know I'll never do. And right now, there are so many characters out there that I don't have.
Same
that
here.
Every banner is like, I'm so tempted to pull on it. So instead of like being smart and saving them and just saying, okay, I'm committing to one banner and I'm going to get everyone I can from this one, I keep summoning on all of them. So I have like a 3.5 chance to get a 5-star and like a gajillion different banners. And I got my 4th 5-star parry, which was really frustrating. And it was the day before she got demoted. So that hurt. That hurt. That could have been Nephany, but it was not. It was Perry. Yep. So yeah, I'm struggling there, and I want to get the spring units. Actually, Spring Shireena, I really want. Oh, I forgot Alphonse is on a horse. Like that's pretty cool.
Yes.
I want to get those two specifically, and I don't know if I'm even going to get the summon on that banner because I want the Thracia units too. I love Olwen, so it's Todd and I are different there too because I like Leaf and I like Nana and I like Reinhardt. But Olwen, I love her. I really just from Fire Emblem Heroes. Her voice is a different actress this time, but her original voice actress did such a good job. And I learned about her character through Heroes, and I love her. She's so cool. So I really want the new Olwen variant, and I haven't gotten her yet. And I also kind of want Reinhardt because he is.
Reinhardt.
Yeah, Reinhardt makes fun of himself and his memes with his new dialogue lines, because before he always said, magic is everything, and that was quick meme fodder. So now he goes, a mage knight needs to be gifted in more than just magic, my friend. that was a good little wink from them. And I also finished my Fire Emblem Awakening permadeath run, and I went hard writing down the statistics. I won't bore you with them all, but Robin and Crom were my two constant heroes. I think Robin was hero 15 times and Crom was hero 12 times. And the Fallen, if I may just pour one out for the homies, Virion died in the second to last chapter.
Ouch.
Well, he retired. He runs away.
Oh, fair enough.
Vake died at the Longfort in chapter 3. Early death. Stahl died at Valm Castle. Stahl's death was heroic, though, because I had my girl, my wife Mary Bell, and my Crom's daughter Lucina and Cynthia, and they were trying to hold this left side of my advance. So Walhart's got his dudes on the left side, and he's sending them down, and they overwhelmed us. They were too strong. I thought we could if I got decent luck, I would have been able to beat them, but the luck didn't go my way, and that side fell. So I had to get everybody back to safety, and I couldn't do it. And I didn't have enough rescues, and I didn't have enough mages, so I had to put somebody out there to die. And it was like, I can't put Lucina out there to die. I can't put Cynthia out there, right? That's Crom's daughter. Like, I'm not going to put the royal family at risk. I'm not going to let my wife Marybelle go down. And Stahl was like, I'll do it. I'll die for the team.
I highly doubt that Stahl actually said that.
Well, he did. And also, you know, I like to think that he did, because he does say when Emerin dies that he would gladly fight and die for House Ulysse. So I like to think that Stahl went down a hero charging in, because I did have to put him right in the middle so everybody would go to him and kill him. It was really sad, but it was a heroic death for Stahl. Cordelia, I lost at Border Pass. That was chapter 7. That was pretty
you
sad.
Backered. How dare you let her die?
I know. I was sad. Gregor died in a skirmish, which was just really embarrassing for him.
That is
Nawi died at Balm Castle Approach. Nawi was one of my best units. When she went down, I thought I was in trouble, but Tiki just stepped right in. Olivia died at the Sea Road when you were in the boat battle. She just got clipped by a Pegasus Knight. And Anna died in Plegia Castle when you have to escape when Valadar is like, surprise, I'm gonna take the Fire Emblem. And Anna was like, there were three mages attacking her. They had a 35% chance to hit, and she had to dodge just one of them, and she just kept getting hit, and then she died. Ugh. I was really angry with her. But
that
was it. Yeah, I know, that was the word. It was so frustrating. But I lost 8 units. That was pretty good. I mean, I didn't recruit all the children, unfortunately. I didn't recruit all the children, but it was a lot of fun to play it that way. I'm going to go on to Sacred Stones and do that next. I think I'm going to try. I'll do Erica's route, and then I'll play Birthright, and then I'll do Ephraim's route, and then I'll do Path of Radiance, and I'm just going to keep scaling up on the difficulty until I get to Conquest, which I probably will fail on and have to like restart. So
probably. Nah. And then hopefully by the time you're done with that, we'll actually, you know more about Fire Emblem for Switch.
Right, yeah.
Anytime now, Nintendo.
God, when will they
E3.
Pull the cover off that thing?
E3 has to be. No later than E3. Well, with that, we have actually had a very interesting week full of news, and I actually can't wait to get to some of this. So, it's time to go down the warp pipe. Now, Will, I'm going to start with you because you had a new game release or something to talk about.
Yes, it's basically regarding to XC's new recent announcement of a couple of games they've announced it. So, like, ranging from multi platforms. Like, first things first, like, they're bringing back a really dark horse game, basically called Bullet Witch, which, like, yeah, I think this is before Bayonetta's time. Like, I only heard about this game, like, this is, like, back during the PS2 era days, Bullet Witch. So, yeah, that's, like, one of the darkest horses of the gaming industry. So, yeah, people who like Bullet Witch, praise to you. So, yeah, I'm happy for that. That's only coming up for, I believe, it's on the Windows and PS4 currently right now, so no Switch units. And, naturally, Xseed has actually announced that more Sen and Kagura games are coming over to the PS4. But also, there's also one game that's coming to the Switch. And I think you probably have seen this on the YouTubes or the interwebs. They officially have a Western release a Western release on our side, and basically it's called Senran Kagura Reflex.
Gosh, and not this game.
Oh, I saw this.
It was called Reflex in Japan, but now it's officially getting a Western release and it's coming over here stateside as a digital release currently right now.
Well, I'm gonna have to block you on Twitter.
Come on! Okay, look. It's like, you gotta give props to Konichiwa. Like, I was really surprised how, like, they announced that this is coming stateside. It's like, wow, I never thought I'd see the day.
And tell the audience what you requested. What was the one condition that would make you not buy the game?
I never did say that. Like, the
only
thing... Oh, if they if they cut out anything, but like, we're talking
they XC, cut out anything, right?
Yeah, censorship.
Right. So, yeah. as long as like, XC has been a great tracker for keeping things very straight from its source material. So, like, I props to XC, and again, more life in hometown, baby. More life in hometown.
I'm probably gonna have to join you, Tyler, in blocking Will on Twitter.
Oh, come on! You know what you're expecting. Have you not seen
no
playthrough?
No, I mean, I didn't know what I was expecting, and then I found that one tweet of yours.
I was cracking up.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, what the? And now you're doing this game, which we all know what it is. So
hello, you might as well. Heck, I was very surprised that even the producer Tanaka Kenichiro, like, what actually was researching hard on this game, how the HD ROM can actually replicate the feeling of it.
Stop it.
I mean, we have the technology.
Stop.
People. We have the technology.
Will, stop it. Moving on. Right now. Okay. From a game that
check it out if you're interested.
No,
it
shut up,
like
Tyler.
It's like a high-quality title.
Shut up, Tyler.
It's coming this summer.
Stop it. I will delete you from existence. I will go Matt Hardy on your sorry carcasses. And I appreciate anyone who got that reference. From a game that we're never going to speak about on this podcast again, to a game that is interesting for numerous reasons. Level 5, if you recall last week's podcast, said that they were going to be bringing some of their main titles to the Switch in the future. Well, the future is soon, apparently, because they have officially announced their first Switch title, Yo-Kai Watch 4.
Right.
Now, here's what's interesting about this. We have not gotten Yo-Kai Watch 3 here in the U.S. So this is raising questions. Are we going to get 3 and then, like, next year get 4? Or will they maybe pull an Earthbound and skip an entry and then get us another one? So, I don't know, but Level 5 is already promising that this version of Yo-Kai Watch will take full advantage of the Switch, possibly the HD Rumble. They're going to make it bigger, make it more detailed, more content in it. So, that's that. They're already living up to their promise, and I was surprised to get this announcement so soon.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the only thing I'm just going to remember is, like, Yo-Kai Watch with me. Oh, God, that opening.
Whatever works, right? I mean...
And those games did have pretty poor sales on over here on the 3DS, yeah. So I hopefully they have better luck on the Switch. I wouldn't be shocked if they just skipped an entry, though, as you were saying, just because They might as well just give us the latest and greatest. If they want to get people into it, you know, better than here's an older version of the Yokai Watch game.
Are you sure about those sales? I could have sworn they were doing okay here in the U.S.
No, they were pretty poor. I'll double check it, but I'm pretty sure.
Please last do. Last I heard about it, like again, since the last game first, the original Yokai Watch, then the two like the expansions, the Black and the two different versions that came out a while afterwards. Last I checked, I heard it was like pretty. I mean, it did okay. I mean, nothing great. Yeah.
Japan did much better, obviously. This is like their lifeblood outside of Pokemon. It's like, oh, Pokemon's not here. Where's Monster Hunter? Oh, Monster Hunter's not here. Where's Yo-Kai Watch? You know, give us something. So, but yeah, that's interesting. Hopefully, we'll get more announcements from them in the future about future Switch titles, whether it be Professor Layton or Ni No Kuni or something else. So, fingers crossed for that. Moving on to something we touched on earlier, Faye Channel. So yeah, we had another impromptu Faye Channel, and thank you, Will, for those reminders because I totally did forget. But we got some very interesting news. Basically, a lot of things. Honestly,
yes, a lot.
Nothing like I would go super dramatic, but a lot of
much needed changes.
Yes, let's call it improvements, changes, or fines. You know, the stuff that keeps you playing after you're slightly getting bored. For example, Tempest Trials. I'm very happy about this one. Tempest Trials has officially gotten a upgrade in downgrading because they have made it A, that your stamina will not take as much to do Tempest Trials. B, the cost of getting certain prizes has gone down to reflect Tempest Trials Mini. C, the bonus character, every bonus character now will give you a 40% boost, which is awesome because I hated having to do 20%. Is that it for Tempest Trials?
I have the list right here. So basically, first, there is an automatic recommendation on the difficulty when you go in to it. There's boosted stats for all allies in the first two battles of each day. All bonus allies are now 40% instead of the usual split 40 and 20. Less stamina is required, and the event length is lowered to 10 days instead of 14 days, but the total score needed will be the same as the Tempest Trial Mini. So, yeah. So, shorter time, but you get the points much more faster.
It's going to be hard to not get the max reward. It's really what
there
it boils down to.
And again, like these small tweaks are just what make the game even better. Because again, I hated having only the 20% one, and now I can get 40%.
Right.
And then I love doing Tempest Trials minis because they were a lot easier to get the prizes. And now we're gonna have that in the full Tempest Trials, which we're gonna have very soon with the arrival of the Athracia Tempest Trials, which will bring us Finn, the third and final for now, I should say, the Thracia character, so that's going to be good. And since I have Leaf and Nana, I get the 40% guaranteed!
Jeez, so, lucky you.
Hey, it's about dang time. Let's see, what other certain things, as we mentioned before, there are a lot of 5-star characters that have been taken out of the 5-star banner and put into the 4-star and 3-star
groups. Much needed.
Thank goodness, because it's just... Again, Tyler got... was it? You say your 5th 5-star parry?
Fourth.
Yeah, 4th 5-star parry. That's 3 too many.
It is. Too many, to be honest.
Outside of upgrading them yourselves, obviously, but summoning-wise.
Right.
1, sure. 2, okay, stats. 3, really? 4, really?
Yeah.
So, so that was a big thing. We'll just run down what all the big
things. Yeah, I'm actually looking at it right now because like this is actually what I also suggested back in the previous podcast as well. Like, now they're beginning each like monthly special, there will be a special ore promotion. So like starting this month, currently right now, there's a 1-person ore promotion with extra ores such as feathers or other resources. So right now if you haven't bought any orbs, there is currently a promotion right now for 21 orbs for only $10, and with that comes 6,000 feathers. So yeah, as I said, we were waiting for like discounts on orbs, so you don't have to feel too guilty about doing a blood sacrifice. So yeah, for everyone who wants to get discount orbs, now they're doing discount orbs now. So this will do it for each month, one per customer. So yeah, look forward to it.
The only problem I think is the value on this one is awful compared to the value on the last one. The last one was like $6 and you get a 5-star Black Knight, 15 orbs, and some feathers. Like it was like way, way better than this one. Like this is not that good of a deal. Like it's not a bad deal for this game, which is like way too expensive as is. But
you get a freaking 5-star unit, so
right,
yeah, that's
right,
kind of
it was worth
deal.
It for yeah. I mean, if you're gonna buy orbs, this is a good deal. But it's not like you're getting a really cheap. You're getting 5 characters for $10.
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice to actually just like get a 5-star unit, but then again, that kind of would break the game in kind of a way. Now we think about it, but
yeah.
it would be nice if they like at least give us like a 4-star character of some sort. I don't know.
Meh.
So yeah, that. Also, like, this on cosmetic upgrades, there's going to be a new home screen banner, new improvements into the friends list, friend cap is now increased to 100, and the hero mirror cap is increased to 5,000. So now you can earn more feathers with your heroes. Let's see. Also, regarding to Grand Hero Battle now, instead of just one Grand Hero Battle, now you can do 2 Grand Hero Battles now, so it'll be rotating. So included will be, like, Legion, Valtor, Zerfel, Clarice, Avis, Barukut, and Kaimu. As they pronounced it. So, yeah, instead of one Grand Hero Battle.
Yeah, can we just pause right there? Kaimu? Really?
That's right.
I mean,
I always say Camus,
right?
But it is
Camus.
I've
always
like...
said Camus, because, and I was like, no, it's Kaimu. Really? Really?
I guess he has a silent in this one. Yeah.
It's a foreign, I forget, I think it's Greek. I'm not sure if it's Greek or not. I think it's Greek. But...
Yeah, I... Okay, yep, and as we're going to, yep, we're going to Grand Hero Battle, yep, Sias, yeah, Sias, the Bishop of Flame in Thracian 766 will be available on April 17th.
I knew I was missing one, that was it.
Yeah, Sias, so, and yeah, as I said, all bound hero battles, legendary hero, and Grand Heroes will now cause 0 stamina to pay, so yeah.
That's
so
awesome.
All Grand Hero battles, you don't need, will not take any stamina at all, so yeah, you can fight these Grand Hero battles at your will. And lastly, there's the new event, which the new emote is called Grand Conquest.
This is going to be great.
This one is kind of an interesting take, because I'm reading the details here. In Grand Conquest, Alphonse, Shireen, and Anna will be split into 3 factions. Players will be automatically be assigned to one of them. Players can attack adjacent areas held by enemy factions and raise the total score for the team, which changes area due to color, depending on which is the high score, every 2 hours. So Grand Hero Conquest will have its own stamina bar, which fills one per hour. Grand Hero Conquest are played in the same way as Rival Domains. So there's a score bonus depending on how many players are fighting and they're currently. Furthermore, by ascending the Grand Conquest tiers, bonus items will be given, as bonus scores will be given adjacent areas to the one you contributed in. So basically, you can also earn orbs, items, just a whole lot of feathers. So think of it as the expanded version of the domain battles. So, and the first Grand Conquest battles will start on April 13th, PT midnight. So yeah, it's actually not too soon. Not too far off. And also, lastly enough, is, I mean, to celebrate this, 20 orbs will be given on April 13th to May 9th. So, beginning tomorrow, you get 20 orbs free.
Yep.
I think that's about it. Yeah.
That's good. Well done.
But still, like, that was pretty impressive. And, you know, we're going to have new banners coming out. And, you know, we already got Thracia. First of all, I forgot to mention this when I got Leaf. I was listening to Leaf's dialogue, and this just makes me want to play Thracia. I mean, can we please get Genealogy of the Holy War and Thracia over here as ports? I mean, I know they said there's not going to be another, you know, main Fire Emblem title on the 3DS, so just put them to the Switch. Especially Genealogy, because of the grand scale and the potential epic cutscenes between, you know, Sigurd and all of us. You know,
those stories are so good. I mean, Heroes does a great job, I think, of conveying them. I could understand being disappointed if you were a Thracia fan, though, and you wanted... I mean, you only get Leaf and Nana. Like, we already had Reinhard and Olwen. So
I get
from Intelligence Systems perspective, they want to give you familiar faces. So you're like, oh, shoot, I got to get that next Reinhard. And you spend orbs, but if you were like a true diehard Thracia fan, you're probably a little disappointed if they didn't put in other characters like
we got Finn, and who was the other one? Will
Ishtar.
The Grand Tier? Ishtar. Yeah. So I mean, like that's 4 new ones, and then
yeah,
Sias. Reinhardt.
Sias is the Grand Hero Battle. Ishtar is the one that a lot of people wanted, though.
Okay, still, but I mean, we still got time. I mean, the fact that they're putting in, it took them this long to get Leaf in, who was technically the main character, you know. Like, that's saying something. And, you know, Reinhardt and Olwen are 2 of the most popular fake characters ever, despite being from a game that only was released in Japan. So,
Can we talk about the fact that they got alts before Marth did? They have alternate costumes before Marth got alternate costumes.
You are still hung up on that.
Yes.
The Hero King does not get any respect.
It's so wrong.
No? He gets respect. It's not in the way that Tyler wants.
And just briefly as well, like, just to talk about the new story chapters, I feel so sorry for Gunther.
Whoa, spoilers, say spoilers first.
Okay. I know,
we're about to drop a spoiler, so if you don't want to hear anything, Skip for about a minute while Will whines. Okay, now you can go.
Jeez Louise, they introduce you to a character and like, nope, we'll kill them off. Like, and of course it had to go in Sigurd fashion.
Yeah, that was bad. I was so mad because I needed that Gunthra to replace my bad IV'd Gunthra. I have a plus HP minus res Gunthra, and she's all about res, and she only has 22 res when it's minus res. I was so mad that they killed. I needed her.
I got a Gunthra, and I'm happy with her. Yeah.
Right. I said it just got the last one. Yeah.
I mean, Will totally spoiled it for me on the Slack forums. Thanks a lot, Will. And I'm just like, seriously? And so, like, I watched it, and I'm like, and we see Surtur, who is easily the best villain in Fae, and possibly one of the best in Fire Emblem, if we're really thinking about
it. No, come on.
I'm not saying he's as good as
come
Ash.
On.
I'm not saying he's as good as Ashnard, but his personality is totally BA.
He's just evil. He's just evil.
But there is beauty in, okay, not beauty, but there is interest in being pure evil and just not giving a dang. You know, like with Gunther, that death scene was totally epic. Like, he literally cut off the whole, no, sister, I will save you. He didn't let that happen. He goes, it's like, woman, why do you think I left her alive? Burn!
Okay, but name one Fire Emblem villain that's less interesting than him. He doesn't do anything.
Garnon.
Like, what?
Garnon from Fates.
Oh, King Garon. Okay, yeah. I mean,
sorry,
I said
Garnon. I'm sorry, that's one of my characters. Sorry. Garon. He was total putz.
He was a bad villain.
He was a bad villain. Let's see, what's another one?
Surtur is on his level, though.
Huh?
Narsian?
Narsian's a great villain.
Eh.
Narsian's pretty beloved, I would say.
Anyway, but you know, I like Surtur, and I like the connection to Norse mythology. So, you know, I guess I'm a little biased, but I still think that, you know, given where we... Oh, Veronica.
I like Veronica more than him.
Oh, please. She didn't get any personality until Surtur showed up.
Well, yeah. I mean, no, she always had, like, a little bit of intrigue as to what was causing her to do the things, like her cursed dragon blood. I agree, she's not a great villain, but, like, it's hard for a mobile game to have a great, compelling villain. Surtur is fine, he does his job, but I wouldn't say he's a great Fire Emblem villain. He's fine.
Okay. But still, like, I was surprised when Gunther died, especially because we summoned her, or we got to summon her long before she was introduced. That always struck me the wrong way, and then now, like, she's dead.
That
like,
makes sense.
doesn't make sense. It's like, and then, like, the way she talked about, like, your avatar character,
mm-mm.
You know,
but
it
she loves
like,
you.
Yeah, it's like she was, like, in love with you, and I'm like, okay, dig it, word. But, like, oh, now she's dead. Like, okay, you know, better to love and lost, I suppose, I guess, sure. You know, I mean, I guess the heat was too much.
Yeah, and I have seen so much, like, people actually shipping Gunther and Sigurd now because of that, their
oh,
death
gosh.
Causes.
That's a sick burn. Ah! No,
clap,
I just,
clap,
seriously
clap.
Though, but one of the reasons I want to see Genealogy of the Holy War as a port is because I want, as weird as this sounds, I want to see full-on cutscene of Alvis burning Sigurd alive. Now, obviously, they won't go, like, full, you know, anime gore or, like, Attack on Titan or anything like that. But, like, I want to see – here's how I picture it. So, you know, the whole scene is, like, Alvis is on a cliff. You know, Sigurd and his army is below them. And then he shows up Deirdre. There we go. Deirdre's at Alvis's side. She's hypnotized or whatever. And then Alvis – I could just see Alvis summoning Meteor, Sigurd just, like, standing there, just watching in horror as what's about to happen. And then, much like the Splatoon Smash Brothers thing, you're going to see the Meteor in his eyes as it gets closer to him.
Yeah,
and then
cool.
And then, you know, you'll see – we'll cut back up to Alvis, and we'll see, like, the reflection is his eyes as they're burning alive. And I'm like, I want to see that because that's, like, a very powerful moment in Fire Emblem history. And yet – when we got it originally, it was literally a pixel. And a
right,
pixel
right.
Flame. So you have the Switch. If the 3DS could do those great cutscenes from Shadows of Valentia, you know the Switch can do them just as good with a bigger screen. So deliver. Okay? Deliver. Okay. Moving on to Bethesda. This was an interesting one. So while we're still waiting for a Wolfenstein to show up on the Switch. There's been a lot of questions about what's coming next for Bethesda and Nintendo. And while Bethesda has admittedly been a little bit coy, They have also talked about, you know, the future in Potentia, let's call it that. First off, they said that the only reasons that they took a while with Doom, Skyrim, and then Wolfenstein because they needed the time to get them on the Switch, which is totally understandable, especially for Wolfenstein. But they said that if it's possible, they will try to, you know, do same day launches, if possible, which I can respect, you know. So we'll see where that goes. And then they also revealed that if there are possibilities for new exclusive titles from Bethesda on the Switch, they're going to consider it, which again is, you know, it's something saying.
I think it's more than something. I mean, that's really important. I think we're going to talk more about it later, but
yeah.
I think those exclusive games are critical.
Yeah, I mean, and like, and we all saw what happened with, you know, Mario and Rabbids. So imagine that with a Bethesda game with the fan base they have. I mean, Bethesda games do well, and while I don't know the numbers for Doom and Skyrim on Switch, they were good enough at least. So especially Doom, I think Doom did particularly well. I'd have to look that up, but you know.
Yeah, they haven't released official figures yet.
So again, they're not discounting the possibility. They're saying, they're basically saying if we feel we can deliver it, we will. And they obviously felt that they could, you know, deliver it, those three games on the Switch, or they wouldn't have done it at all because they haven't done it in the past. So here we go. Pete Hines of Bethesda said it'll just depend. It'll depend on whether or not we think the good is a good fit for the platform technically, and whether we think it's something that the audience wants on Switch. In that way, it's literally no different than any other platform that we look at or any other game that we do. So, yeah. Okay, there is hope. And hey, you never know, with both Nintendo and Bethesda going to be at E3, anything is possible. Okay? Alright. And now for something that I know Tyler will enjoy. Shovel Knight!
Yes.
All right. So Shovel Knight has crossed a rather nice milestone.
This is a weird story, first of all. I mean, you go ahead and break it down. I was shocked by this whole story.
All right. So here's the deal. So ever since Shovel Knight's launch, which for whatever reason they say is two different ones, but whatever, Shovel Knight has now sold 2 million units across all platforms combined, you know. And which is already a great milestone, especially since the fact that, you know, it was a Kickstarter game, it's imported everywhere, literally. Okay, almost literally. But, you know, it's been almost everywhere, and it's done a lot. So Yacht Club revealed that as of March 1st, it sold 2 million units, which is great. But the third best-selling version is the Nintendo Switch version, which in less than a year... it had sold 370,000 units. And what's more, although I'm not really sure how I understand this, it's also the most profitable version of Shovel Knight. So that was interesting. Oh, here's another one, though. The second place bestseller was the 3DS.
And the third was the Wii U.
No, the fourth was the Wii U. The first was... It went PC, 3DS, Switch, Wii U.
Oh, right. I wasn't counting PC because I'm not a console.
So literally three of the top four were Nintendo platforms. So that's pretty impressive. And now, before Tyler, you tell me about what's weird about that, I want to bring something to you guys' attention. A couple weeks ago, we talked about how Nintendo revealed their best-selling indie games on Switch, and Shovel Knight was number 10, okay? So if they knew about the 370,000, which I'm pretty sure was... Actually, I'm going to look up the list right now. So if they said, okay, 370,000 up to March 1st. Okay, yeah, the list was given on March 20th, so they knew about that. So, okay, so if it was 370,000 for number 10, think about how much more 9 through 1 did.
Yeah, that's true. That's,
yeah.
That's
especially
big numbers.
Especially like SteamWorld Dig 2 and Stardew Valley. Guaranteed over, I don't know, 700,000, 800,000, maybe
a
million. I don't know. But if Treasure Trove was number 10 with 370,000, which again, for a ported game that's been everywhere, that's pretty impressive. How well did 9 through 1 do? Food for thought.
Yeah, that's a good point.
All right. Why do you think this was so weird, Tyler?
I can't believe that it... I mean, okay, this isn't an insult to 2 million units. That's great for an indie game.
Yes.
I can't believe it only sold 2 million units.
Oh, that's
I
fair.
feel like Shovel Knight has been around forever. I mean, it's been around for like 3 years, 3+ years at this point.
2014.
Yeah.
Technically.
Right, right. So 2 million units. That's okay. That's a lot, but it's not a lot. And like Shovel Knight has kind of become like a classic game. I mean, if you would ask me how much Shovel Knight had sold, I would have been like probably like 10 million across all platforms.
Come on, come on.
Because it's no, it was huge. Like that's the thing is because it was the first big Kickstarter success or one of the first big Kickstarter successes, one of the most high profile. So I honestly assumed that the game had sold a lot more than that.
And what you get when you assume.
Well, it's still like, you know, it's an incredible number for an indie title, apparently. But I was shocked that it was only 2 million. Like, I really thought that it was a lot more than that, especially given that it released on all platforms. If you haven't played Shovel Knight yet,
it's good.
You got to go play it. It's really good. Like, it's absolutely worth it. And I think that the Switch version was the most profitable because it cost $25 because you got the two different – or the three different stories.
Yeah, with Treasure Trove. That's true.
So, and that – it was a little bit more expensive than the original version, which I think – I don't think it was $20. So it makes sense that, you know, the Switch would be the most popular. But that's the version I would recommend, the Treasure Trove, because all campaigns in that game are great.
The reason I think you're so dissuaded by this is – and I think I just realized this – is that when it technically first released – like released, it wasn't on many platforms because they had to fulfill their Kickstarter.
Right, right.
You know, so that's why it was on the Wii U and certain other things. And based on what they said on their site, they technically didn't like release it for like full on sale until like 2016. You know, for whatever reason, I had to relook that up. So, you know, and so fast forward, you know, they said 26 months since their launch. So that would be like late 2015, I guess, but 26 months later, after like their full-on release, they hit 2 million. So
right.
I can understand that. And I guess let's see, a quarter is 500,000. So you know, a little like a fifth is 400,000. So a fifth of those sales came from the Switch.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's impressive. I mean, they also it's even more strange to me because they give that game out at. It's on sale a lot.
Yeah.
You don't have to buy, like if you buy the Treasure Trove, that's $25 for all four stories. The King Knight story is still coming out. And that's going to be free if you already have the Treasure Trove. Like, how are they making money off that? Like, it's a pretty cheap game. It's fascinating to me. Like, I'm trying to remember how big the team is from the credits. And it wasn't like minuscule. It wasn't like a puny team. So it just makes me wonder how much money developers make off of games. I mean, by all accounts, Shovel Knight's been a really popular indie game. So how profitable are those games? It's fascinating to me and a little bit disheartening, but
you also got to remember it like this. They had a Kickstarter. Okay? And so like when they made this game, okay, I'm looking at the Kickstarter right now. It was funded in April of 2013, give or take. And they had basically 15,000 people. And they pledged $300,000, and then they did like I think they did like an there they go they did an after campaign, like a PayPal campaign, to help get even more, which by that time was pretty massive. So that money was made to make the game, and then once they had all the sprites, they just had to that they made Spectre, Torment, and what was the other one?
Just Plague of Shadows.
Yeah, Plague of Shadows. There you go. So that might have now that they had that money, and Shovel Knight did well enough. Even if they just broke even with through the Kickstarter, they're making money with every sale, which allowed them to do Plague of Shadows and Spectre of Torment, which probably got them even more money. Now they're doing the King's Knight one. So it might be just because of the 8-bit nature of it and certain other things, it might not have cost them that much to make it. So, and then, you know, with 2 million units, that's a lot of money. Plus, they have shopped Shovel Knight out in certain other ways, which I'm sure they got paid for.
Yeah, true.
Like with Ukulele and the Amiibo and all that. And so of course, as the years go on, Shovel Knight just keeps getting more popular. It's one of those weird things. So it makes sense to me. But
yeah,
still.
I guess it's just all perspective. You know, you think of like if Super Mario Odyssey put out 2 million sales, you'd be like, oh my God, what a huge disaster. But for Shovel Knight, it's fascinating.
Yeah, actually, you're right. You know, a main market title. So,
right, right.
Yeah. But yeah, I can see where you're saying that. But all we can hope for now is just continued sales, and for if it gets into Smash Brothers,
oh yeah,
gone.
Oh yeah, that
sales
change.
Gone.
And yeah, yeah, also just as a quick connection as well to complement that, because I believe they also Yacht Collectibles also finally introduces some details regarding to the whole amiibo as well. Because I know I've been like bringing it up in previous podcasts, but the 3-pack amiibo I think is we're finally getting a firm release sometime this year. I think.
There you go.
Because I remember seeing it, like, I believe it's in, I think it was in either PAX, I think it was in either PAX or, yeah, I think it was in PAX, but we finally see, like, the Meebos actually out as and on display, I believe, on during PAX East. So, yeah, I think Yacht Club Games is more or less is starting to prepare for, like, something big we're going to Shovel Knight, to say the least.
Hope. Here's hoping. And again, if Shovel Knight comes to Smash Bros., which, if we're being honest, will be shocking if he doesn't. It'll increase sales even more. It'll be crazy how many people buy Shovel Knight. So, but let us never forget that when Shovel Knight faced Scrooge McDuck, he lost. Moving on. All right. Okay. From something to make Tyler happy to something that'll make Will happy. And no, not that game. Will, we're still not talking about that. The Octo expansion has just gotten a new interesting detail revealed about it. So, for those who somehow don't know, there's going to be a paid DLC coming out starring an Octoling that you will be playing as, and you'll be going through this entire underground complex underneath Inkopolis, and you'll be, you know, weaving through the subway system trying to get to Inkopolis. Well, apparently, as revealed on the official Splatoon Twitter feed, you're going to be able to get things called Nelly Memories, which could be translated into something else later on. But they're these little collectible items that mimic certain characters and creatures within the game, like the Octolings, the Squidlings. What was the cat's name again? Jeb?
Judd.
Judd. Yeah. Thank you.
Judd and Little Judd.
Yeah, there you go. Judd and Little Judd, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then then there's this new creature called Galiciopod. Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Gusok. Everyone's saying it's Galiciopod from Sun and Moon, and I totally agree with them, but it's called Mr. Gusok. And you can show these items to him and get something revealed or something like that. And so again, we're continuing to flesh out this paid expansion, which makes me excited because I'm really pumped for this.
And I'm just looking at these things right now. Like, doesn't it remind you of those little cutesy erasers you bought during back in elementary school?
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Yes.
And it's like, yeah, like so reminiscent of those very erasers I bought back in your youth. And yeah, just to see how Mr. Suck uses, because like if I remember correctly, he does have a. Like, again, if you see it in his design, he does have a whole suitcase of these, like, little collectibles. So I just wonder, what role they serve? I said it's memories, so perhaps it will reveal the memories of the Octoling, how it was created in that whole lab chamber. I don't know. That's just my theory.
But it's exciting for sure, and I'm hoping that, you know, we're going to get even more details about what you can expect later on, so... All right, next up we have Blaze Blue cross tag battle. They released the English dub for the game, or sorry, English dub trailer for the game, because if you don't know, some of these franchises are more popular in Japanese, and one of them, Under In Birth, I think that said that right.
Yeah, In Birth Reboot. Yeah, Rebirth Reunite.
Yeah, has never been translated in English, so you know there was a lot of questions about. How they would sound, and you can find the trailer online. Most of the characters sound all right. I think Ragnar sounds like crap, but
it's the same person.
But you could say it's the same person, but still sound like crap. Will, it's true. That guy, I don't know whether it was his
Patrick
fault.
Patrick Seitz.
I don't know if it was his fault or Arc Systems. They just turned up his volume way too loud, and it's just like he sounds like he's shouting every line in a non-efficient way. And all this makes me realize is thank the good Lord above that they actually went to Rooster Teeth and got the actresses behind Ruby, because if they pulled that with Ruby, the whole fan base would have lost their minds. But Ruby and Weiss, who we only got to see in the trailer, sound exactly like they should, and personality and in voice. So Thank goodness.
Also, Aaron and Barbara also made their voice performance in the trailer as well. They did have Blake and Yang at the end of the trailers, to say the least. So,
in a very interesting cutscene, which makes you think like a special attack is going to be possible. We'll see.
And it's definitely something to look forward to say the least. Like, yeah, finally hearing the first official dubbing trailer, build of the game. So to say the least, it's good. It's good. Again, like the last game, Central Fiction, was never localized. No dub whatsoever. Many people were kind of pissed about that.
Yeah.
So now to have this game to be back in English dubbing is definitely good to see, which I know a lot of people were happy that, yeah, BlazBlue is now getting back their dubs. And they're pretty passionate.
Yeah. And then
I think that our good friend Koopa Keith, though, reported back that the game didn't play very well when he was at.
Hater.
Yeah.
And so, again, it's still probably in the builds because the build I played back at their new Comic Con, again, it was like a very simplified button control. So, like, perhaps, like, they'll implement the full control, like, later on down the line. But I guess for demo purposes, it's just a very simple button control. Like, at least that's for demo purposes.
We'll see. We'll see how it goes.
And also, it's a compliment as well, because actually during last night's stream that was held at Next Level Games here in Brooklyn, New York, they are now also announced a collector's edition of the game as well, which is currently priced at $100, which involves, I believe, a mini soundtrack, a 15-CD soundtrack, art book, and 4 acrylic figurines, including Ruby, Ragna, the main character Rebirth, and Yu Narukami, a Persona 4 Arena.
You know what? I lied. I just looked it up, so don't take my BlazBlue might not be good thing to heart. He was talking about the SNK fighting game.
Oh, that's bad.
I went to double check to make sure that. Yeah, and I'm glad I did.
Because, I mean, if Arc Systems is, of course, the people behind Guilty Gear and, of course, Dragon Ball FighterZ, so it's like they know how to make fighting games. So if it doesn't play good, something's wrong.
Right.
And they're the most technical one of the bunch. I mean, there's not like Street Fighter or Tekken.
A hilarious thing that happened at the end of the trailer was that Ruby met Ragna and was like, oh my gosh, your sword is so cool. Can I see it? And like, that's Ruby.
Again, Ruby. Now think about it, like, as long if any weapon you have can change it to something else besides a gun, then you know the Ruby team is like,
she's going to freak when she sees it's a scythe. She's like, oh my gosh, look, I have a scythe too. What can yours do?
Yeah, I believe that one of the other characters in, I think it's, Rebirth, that also carries a scythe, like, I am the one that brings your death, and I'm the one that will bring victory! like one of the characters on the gameplay trailer. Yeah, it's pretty awesome,
I'm very excited to see how Ruby works in the games. It's gonna be fun. Alright, moving on to something that I guess makes me happy, just because I remember watching this. Okay, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Ta-da! No, I'm just joking. A long time ago, there was a movie came out. It was called King of Kong, Fistful of Quarters. Brilliantly made documentary about the secret lives. Okay, I guess not secret, but the not well-known lives of professional arcade video gamers. These are the guys and gals who work very hard to get the high scores in the Guinness Book of World Records. So the focus, though, was on these two guys named Steve Wiebe and Billy Mitchell, and they were going for the Donkey Kong, like the original Donkey Kong arcade high score. And these guys were battling back and forth for years, including breaking what many thought was impossible record of getting 1 million points, right? So now in the movie, Billy Mitchell was made out to be a jerk, and rightly so, because he kind of was a jerk. And now we know just how big a jerk he was. Because it was officially decreed by there's a little committee that oversees these things that several of Billy Mitchell's records were faked. I'll tell you how. One of which was shown in A Fistful of Quarters, but yet dismissed at the time. Basically, I'll give you a little help with that, Tyler. At one point in time, Steve Wiebe beat Billy Mitchell's record. Billy Mitchell had the record, and Steve Wiebe came in and broke the 1 million record or whatever and beat him by, like, I don't know, 500 points or whatever. So upon hearing this, Billy Mitchell gave a videotape to a woman to deliver to the council who oversaw these things. It was Twin Galaxies, that was it. Mm-hmm. Twin Galaxies and all that. And the guy who reviewed the tape thought that something was odd because the videotape had, like, time lapses.
Right.
And like skip logs, and yet the Galaxies at the time thought, okay, it's Billy Mitchell, he wouldn't lie to us. Well, then they went back for whatever reason recently and basically decided, yeah, he kind of did cheat because these clearly aren't his gameplay videos, or for whatever reason, I didn't read the full statement, but they gave a very long explanation about why these were doctored, how they were doctored, and because of that, Billy Mitchell has now had every single record he's ever made in any game stripped, and he can no longer try for a new record.
No way! Yeah. Imagine if they did that for, like, ace ball, when people take steroids. Like, yeah. You are disqualified from life.
Pretty much. So, but it's, this was a good, and now, because of that, Steve Wiebe, who is a totally legit gamer, is now credited as the first man to break the 1 million point record in Donkey Kong. So
again, with the growing age of technology, I mean, remember we had old VCR tapes. So yeah. Now with the technology we have today, now I guess it was much more easier to decipher which one is doctored or not.
Pretty much. So just goes to show, ladies and gentlemen, if you cheat, they'll find out eventually. So also, I want to segue and say, if you have not seen X-Play video for the sequel to Fistful of Quarters, it's you have to. They go full Terminator. It's totally great. They basically make it that Billy Mitchell designed an AI to ensure that no one would ever break his high score record, and then the arcade machines became self-aware. Oh, it was great. Oh, I miss X-Play. But so, like, when I found out this story, I had to talk about it because I watched that movie at least, you know, 5 times because they showed it on G4 a lot.
Yes.
It was just a fascinating look because I never thought about, you know, Donkey Kong being held in such high regard as a, you know, an arcade game to the extent that they would want, like, the glitches that you find out about. It's fascinating. So, yeah.
Yeah, the game-breaking screens, the arcade builds of it is like,
the
wow.
Way you can, the way you can make sure the spring doesn't, like, touch you or, like, by jostling back and forth. It's great stuff. So,
yeah, they study it like an art form. It's almost amazing.
It is an art form. So, again, go, and if you haven't seen Fistful of Quarters, go and watch it and see the beginning of the end of Billy Mitchell. Hi-yo! One last thing, and this I'm doing this for strictly an artistic appreciation. Okay, I'm not doing it for Will over there, who's going to scream Nani like 500 times. The Mithra figure has been revealed. I can't remember who's making it, Will?
Yes, it is made by the good people at Good Smile Company, who also makes famous Nendoroid figurines and
figures. That's right. Yeah, so basically, they made a Pyra figure before, and it was absolutely stunning.
And it's sold out immediately, just so FYI.
Oh, I have no doubt. And then now they've made the Mithra figure, of course, from Xenoblade Chronicles 2. Still got a replay. And you know, it looks stunning as well. You know, the sword, the outfit, the detail to her face and her hair and her eyes.
The details is like, yeah, Good Smile Comics has always been very great with regard to their 1/7 scale figurines. And, like, to say the least, like, yeah, any figurines from Nendoroids to 1/7 scales is just amazing. I mean, heck, if you thought Pyra's actually good, and Pyra looks definitely good, Mithra here is like, they got the details right. Actually, it was probably on Twitter, like, okay, you see this? This is what's perfect. This is perfect. Perfection. I said perfect. Perfection. But the thing, of course, naturally, is these things are expensive.
Very.
It's currently at 19,800 yen, or in our case right now, it's $184.54, and that is before tax.
And
so,
shipping.
Yeah, that's easily cool. And shipping. So it's easily over $200. So unless you got that extra moolah, yeah, good luck.
When I was at C2E2 over the weekend, there were these booths just full of, you know, figures of, you know, Nintendo characters, anime characters, gaming characters, of course all the swords and everything, including I saw Ruby Scythe.
Nice.
That was a first. I hadn't seen her before, or her weapon before at a booth, but I have always said that if I was like rich, you know, like a couple million dollars rich, I would buy a two-story house, right? And then I would have a room just dedicated to, like, these figurines. Not unlike how I have seen certain friends of mine who have bigger, you know, accommodations than I do it. Or even you, Will, who has, like, your amiibos on the wall.
Right.
Which I envy. Which I am envious. I can't do that on mine. But, you know, I would love to have bought that figurine, Mithra figurine. At C2E2, there was this absolutely gorgeous Link figurine from Dark Horse.
Oh, that one, yes.
Yeah, it has him in the bow. It's just, it's stunning detail. But it was like, you know, $200. And I'm like, I want to, but I can't. So, you know, it's that kind of thing. But I would have loved to have, you know, these figurines because they're so detailed, you know.
It's very beautiful.
It is very beautiful.
And funny, sadly enough, I actually bought some figurines recently myself, which cost in the $90 range.
There you go.
And yeah, like, to say the least, like, I can see why people will get the figurines because, again, just looking at these things is like, ah, perfection. And like, if you want to get, like, especially, no matter what kind of figurines you want, whether it be like beautiful men, Michelangelo's, anime figurines, whatever for the figurines, even comic book heroes, like just looking at these things is just like very, I mean, sure, it could be expensive, but it's very, I don't know, very satisfying, like very good for the soul and all
yeah,
that.
It's therapeutic.
Yeah.
You come home after a long day, oh, everything sucks, and then you turn your head and you see these gorgeous figurines and you go, maybe it's not so bad.
right.
Maybe it's not so bad.
You actually have it, and heck, these things are collectibles.
There you go.
They're very sought after. Like, I still remember, like, the Camilla ones are, like, up to $250 currently right now. So, yeah. So, if you can afford it, then, yeah, like, do so. But, again, up to you. And actually, as a quick detail right now, because it's currently right now available for pre-order on the Japanese website of Good Smile Company. For the English side, it's not open yet. So, if you want to go get it, go right now at the time of recording.
Tyler, I'm actually curious. If you could get, like, a detailed figure, like what we're talking about with Mithra or Pyra, what character would you want?
Oh, that's a great question.
I know, I'm the host.
And and also, just for track record, they actually did release it, Cordelia and Tharja.
I remember the Cordelia
one. And the Tharja one. Both of those I remember. I would have to say Crom.
Okay.
Love Crom's design because he kind of combines so many Fire Emblem lords. The one, I'd pick Crom.
That's fair. One sim scale. And funny enough, actually, and also funny enough to say Crom because actually they're doing a second resale version of the Figma of Lucina. Of the Figma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, we're gonna move into our main event tonight, and we're gonna talk about third parties now. We've already detailed in previous podcasts and tonight about how many third parties are coming to the Switch in ways that they didn't do with the Wii or the GameCube, et cetera, et cetera. But we're kind of curious about how long this is going to last. Now, we say that because, you know, it's popular right now. The Switch is on fire right now. But you know that Microsoft and Sony isn't going to let that last forever. So our question is, if the PS5, which you know is coming, and whatever Xbox does next are hits in their own right, will the third party still want to bring their stuff to Nintendo? We're going to settle this in a Nintendo discussion. Now, you might be wondering, well, why would this matter? I mean, the Switch is popular right now, and it's the fastest-selling console in the world, et cetera, et cetera. But the problem is that right now, it's not, I guess you could say, too far of a jump from what the PS4 and Xbox One are doing. Now, yes, graphically, they're still very superior, but it's not like, I don't know, Wii to the Xbox 360 and PS3, you know, which was a much bigger jump. So, but if the PS5, again, which you know is coming, and, you know, the next version of the Xbox One X, which is still a good name, you know, if they, like, drive the power of the graphics up even higher to where the Switch couldn't even come close to matching, will the Switch be able to still lure in these third-party companies like we're doing with Capcom and Level 5 and Bethesda and Square Enix? That's the question. Tyler, you were the one who thought of this idea, so why don't you list off your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I was definitely taken by the PS5 rumors that have been kind of swirling, and it does scare me that, you know, these big you know, the next big Bethesda game, as they were saying, they were looking at hopefully having same-day launches. Like, how are you going to have a same-day launch for a game that's on a machine that's Wii U to PS4, probably, power difference? And we can't really say until we know, but hypothetically, if that's what it is. And I really think that the best way Nintendo can avoid having that problem is by creating those independent third-party games that are coming exclusively to Nintendo consoles, like Octopath Traveler.
Yes.
Because if they're able to kind of carve their own, if they're able to get third-party developers saying, okay, yeah, we're going to have this team and they're going to develop for Nintendo systems, then Nintendo has, honestly, at the very least, they're on equal footing, but perhaps even a leg up over the other companies if they're getting these exclusive games made for their hardware. So if I'm Nintendo, I'm doing everything I can to incentivize these third-party developers to make exclusive content for the Switch, such as Octopath Traveler and Mario & Rabbids Kingdom Battle, because really, that's you. Then they have the same strength that the other Microsoft and Sony have, and perhaps even more so, because you would expect the next Xbox and the next PS4 to kind of be Twiddledee and Twiddledum as they have been. So if you get teams developing exclusively for your hardware, that's an incredible spot to be. But it's just a matter of getting the sales there so that it's okay. This is profitable now for these companies to do that.
It's definitely like in that line of thinking. Yes, like I actually kind of remember going to one article going to the people who did SNK Heroines. I think it was NIS America, I think NIS was one of the other companies, but yeah, they, when they were talking regarding to like how they're going to bring SNK Heroines to the Switch and PS4, because I think the only physical version that's going to be available is the Switch version. PS4 is going to be digital only. So when they like talk to Nintendo regarding to this, like, what can you do like to really like really push the system? And they feel that the Switch had the potential because, again, like the aspects, portability, the so on and so forth. Like, is as I said, like the way that Nintendo is gonna keep on doing good, especially with the third parts, is, as I said, continue like carving out that little niche that they made for themselves. Like, as like the Nindies themselves, like these like independent titles that have been made on the Switch down up, it shows that there is great potential, like Golf Story, Project Octopath Traveler, like all these other indie things going to be coming up down the line. And just to, like, that's one thing I expect Nintendo to really do so. It seems like they're really going to be taking that indie market while as well, like, creating something that's, like, again, that's unique to the Switch. Because right now, like, yeah, as I said, Xbox One, Sony is pretty much, again, it's just basically pure power. There's no way they're going to get to compete on that. So therefore, they got to like deal with what they got with the Switch hardware and make what they can with that hardware. And I feel like as long as they continue at that route, like the Nindies, Octopath Traveler, or something even along the like even with old IPs like Travis Strikes Again with Grasshopper Studios, then I'm like, I feel that Nintendo would be in a very good, comfortable spot to claim this territory until Sony or Xbox introduce their own ideas.
Yeah, it's... In essence, this really just boils down to the classic debate that we've had ever since the Wii. Function over power. Because the reason the Wii dominated, it wasn't just that it had some absolutely amazing games for Nintendo. Because technically, not only did they have that, that was the only thing they had. They struggled in the third-party market. Yeah, they had certain titles that were exclusive to them, but they weren't even close to what like the Switch is doing right now. Mm-hmm. Okay, and the Wii U didn't even have that.
Yeah.
So that's a step down in many ways. So the question is, can Sony and Microsoft perform in the market that the Switch is doing? And the answer right now is no, because right now, they're focused on power, like Will said. They are focused on absolutely getting every single graphic possible, which is why I think the Xbox One X is the stupidest thing ever. Because while they do have, like, you know, the super impressive power of the X, you know, and all that, where are the games? They're all ports, or there has not been one exclusive title for the Xbox One X.
I'm looking at you, Scalebound, formerly Rest in Peace.
Exactly. Yes, definitely rest in peace. She almost killed Platinum at Microsoft. Thanks a lot. See, that's why you need to be exclusive to Nintendo Platinum. We're just saying. Wonderful 102. But, you know, where are the exclusives? There aren't none. And the PS4 Pro is no different. It's just a graphical powerhouse. So no matter what they do next, if they can't compete with the portability of the Switch, that gives the Nintendo an advantage, just like they had with the Wii, with their motion controls. Because while the Move and the Kinect had certain advantages over the Wii, the functionality of the Wii Mote and the Wii Nunchuck and then the Wii Mote Plus made it far outpace what those two did. And that's important because the Switch is this portable console. So unless Sony and Microsoft make their own version of the portable console and do it better than Nintendo, which I don't know if they can do, they could, I'm just saying I don't know if they can, I don't think that's going to affect them that much because this is something very, very special. More special than the Wii. Way more special than the Wii U, although obviously the Wii U was the building block for this. So, and people are seeing the potential of this. You know, Capcom, they're bringing their titles over. They're bringing Phoenix Wright over. We just, like I said, we got Yo-Kai Watch. We got, you know, Bethesda for the first time, you know, bring three of their titles over. And Square Enix with Octopath Traveler. And you know that, and again, we've heard all the, for like the last year or so, that Final Fantasy 15 could be coming to the Switch in some capacity. And I'm still hoping for Kingdom Hearts 3. I'm praying for Kingdom Hearts 3. I mean, like, I'm on my knees, praying to the good Lord above. Moving on. There is no doubt in my mind that if the PS5 and, I don't know, what do you want to call it?
The Xbox One, X2.
that's beautiful, Tyler. I like the Xbox One. Thank X2. You. Why not? Oh, that's a Final Fantasy thing, isn't it?
It is. Absolutely.
Final Fantasy X2. Yeah, so if they release the PS5 and the Xbox One X2, that really rolls off the tongue. I like that. You know, there's no doubt that third parties are going to go to that because of the graphical power, because there are a lot of companies that rely on that graphical power to produce their games, like Final Fantasy 15, which is fine. But then, as you know, Ubisoft has proved with the Rabbids and Octopath Traveler proved with its demo, you don't need the great graphics to make a great game. They help, but they aren't the end all be all. And then we're gonna get Yo-Kai, which is gonna be better. I can't wait to see Phoenix on the Switch with, you know, even crisper 3D models and, you know, animated backgrounds, animations, period. You know, it's the subtle things. So,
Yes.
Personally, while they will take a hit, I don't think they'll run away like what happened with the Wii U. I just don't see it happening.
Do you think that a Switch Pro or, you know, Switch 2.0 or Switch XL or, you know, whatever they want to call it, could come out in 2 years to kind of lessen the blow? It's a stronger, more expensive, but stronger version of this, or maybe the same price with, you know, as technology gets cheaper as it evolves. Do you think that could come into play? Because I think that's definitely something that they, if they can't get developers on board with creating exclusive content, they might have to do that kind of awkward half step. Which, you know, that presents problems of its own. Like, can this run on the regular Switch? Probably not.
Probably not.
Then are you kind of, do you have no choice but to upgrade? Or is it like, it's kind of, you get into a hard market to carve out there.
You pull a 3DS, basically.
Right.
So,
but even weirder, because it's a home console. I mean, I don't think that's the best solution. But based on something,
like, based on their past, based on their history, I don't think they'd do that because they, not with the Wii U, they did the whole like 16 gigabyte versus 32 gigabyte thing.
Yeah.
And I got the deluxe, obviously. But you know, and even then, they phased out the 16 bit because they knew that it wasn't a good move for them.
Right, 8 gigabyte was like, yeah, really no one, because Smash Bros. Pretty much took the entire space, right?
Yeah. With the Wii, the only real improvement they had was the Wii Motion Plus, which, to be fair, you didn't need. If you got Skyward Sword, I think Skyward Sword was like the only game you actually needed.
Both installed it with it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I got the collector's edition, which is one of the few times I've ever done that. So I got the CD with the 25-year orchestra. It was great.
Nice. Yeah, I got that too.
The golden Wiimote, which I still have. Yeah. I'm pointing to it right now. Believe me, I'm pointing to it. But I don't see them doing that now. They could do, I gotta say this right. They could do like a a modified version of the Switch to where, like, certain functions that plagued the Switch when it launched are gone, but it won't be a graphical update. It'll specifically be, like, a functional hardware update, if that makes sense. I don't see... And even though they did do this with the 3DS, that caused its own problems. Like, with Xenoblade Chronicles 3D, where you couldn't play it on the 3D, on the regular 3DS, which is why I've never played the original game. Or, like, with the absolutely horrible Hyrule Warriors Legends, where there was two different versions, one for the regular 3DS, one for the Super 3DS, and both were unplayable.
Sorry to stop you, because, like, if I remember correctly, the Xenoblade Chronicles was only specific to the new 3DS. It wasn't, you can't play it on the 3DS.
Exactly. Right. It's like, that was made for that, and that ticked off a lot of players, including myself, because you had to upgrade it to play it.
Was just two games. Imagine if... You know, it's a third party, like all Ubisoft, every Ubisoft game, every EA game, and like all of those games
every
you can't
2K
play
game.
Unless you upgrade. You do get into, you'd really lose everybody but the Nintendo diehards at that point. And how profitable would it be for third parties at that point? Like, it's a hole.
And that's why I don't think it'll happen, if for no other reason than the first year of Nintendo Switch proved it's got graphical power to spare.
It does, but... You know, in worst case scenario, the next consoles are all, they make a huge jump that makes it really difficult. Here's another weird idea that crossed my mind, and this one might be more unpopular, but I think I would like it more than an updated Switch. What if in, like, 3 years, Nintendo, like, they're like, okay, we're continuing to support Switch fully. Like, our games, you're going to be able to play them on Switch, but we're also going to be releasing these same games for a new Nintendo home console. That's meant to compete more directly with the PS5 and the Xbox One, and that's on that level.
Xbox One X2.
right. So, what do you think about that? Like, what if I actually just saw that at the BAFTA Awards, they announced that they are researching new consoles already.
But to be fair, they were already thinking about the Switch after the Wii U came out.
Oh no, of course it's not abnormal, but. Yeah. What if, you know, they come out with another, like, the Switch kind of becomes the 3DS, and then they have a new console to directly compete with Microsoft and Sony. That would be weird, but it's within the realm of possibility.
Is it within the realm of possibility? Yes. Is it dangerous, though? Yes, because then you're sending mixed signals. I mean, the reason the Wii U failed was because people thought it was an extension of the Wii and not a separate console, which... Even though I was, you know, very much of a supporter of the Wii U, I could understand why they said that. Because it just looked like, oh, here's now a new controller that you can play away from your TV. But, you know, it's just still the Wii, right? No, it's not. It's entirely different and blah, 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 blah. So if they were to do that, they would have to do such a marketing campaign to ensure that people did not confuse that this is not an extension of the Switch. And I don't think they would survive from that. Even if this was the greatest console on ever. Because I still think the Wii U was underrated for what happened.
Oh, it was. It totally was.
Totally was. But if you don't brand it right, you're not going to do it. And going back to the Wii, the reason they didn't do anything outside of the Wii Motion Plus for the Wii was because it didn't need to. It was selling. It was selling like hotcakes. And even now with, you know, the biggest game of this year so far being Kirby, which, again, Kirby's great. Loved your review, Tyler.
Thanks. It was good.
8 out of 10. I was surprising. But, you know, like, with it being Kirby, we got only the ports coming up, and then, you know, Mario Aces in June. You know, it's still going to sell because of that backlog, and we got Smash Brothers coming out, which is going to sell millions, okay?
Right.
So it's one of those weird things where Nintendo would literally have to be so threatened. Think about this, because they're not threatened right now. They lost last month's, you know, NPD numbers in consoles, but it didn't affect them at all because the numbers even said that it was a boost because of the Switch. And the Sony and Xbox both had, you know, big releases that carried over into February. Nintendo's not worried. If the reason they went full force on the Switch and killed off the Wii U earlier than they would have otherwise was because they knew they couldn't do anything. So
yeah,
they would have to be threatened by the PS5. No, I gotta say that's right. They gotta be threatened by the immediate sales of the PS5 and the Xbox One X2 to even think about abandoning the Switch or having an evolved version of the Switch come out in 3 years.
Yeah. So. I mean, I guess the last thing they could do is And I guess this is probably the most reasonable. I don't know why this is the last thing that hit my brain, is release the Sega Genesis, you had like a bajillion add-ons. You could do that for your dock for the Switch. They like sell a new dock that actually has technology in it that that takes some of the load off the Switch itself and makes it easier to play those big games. Yeah. I mean, I guess that makes the most sense as to what would happen.
It reminds me of the expansion pack about the N64. Yeah.
I remember that.
You can't like take those games with you wherever, which is obviously the big selling point for the Switch. But at least you have them available. Like that works from that point of view.
It's something that. It's really something that we can only speculate right now, which is obviously what we're doing, because we don't officially know that the PS5 is coming, though we really know it is going to come. And then obviously the Xbox One X2 is going to come out in like 3 months or so with, you know, with 5 trillion terabytes of graphical power. So.
8K game.
Yeah, 8K graphics. It's like, you won't just see the game, you will be in it.
you are the game.
Yeah, there you go. I got it. Okay, the Xbox One X2 RPO, Ready Player One. Which, by the way, is one of the greatest movies of our generation. I've been meaning to write a feature on that, and I can't wait to talk about it more, but I'm just saying. That would be the thing that could threaten Nintendo right now. It's like, screw the Switch, we're going into the Oasis. You know? which, by the way, if I was in the Oasis, I would probably model myself after Ike. Or a certain fire of a character, I'm just saying. But anyway, focusing back on the actual reality, or is it? are we in the Matrix right now? Is there really a spoon?
I would actually have a Palutena figurine instead of a Chrom one?
And again, we have the HD Rumble features, and we're getting a Shinobi Reflex, so...
Shut up!
Had the technology, good sus. I said it many times over. We have the technology, so...
The point is, and I know we kind of diverged, but it was a really good conversation, is that I think, especially because of how well the Switch has done in its first year, and how well it's already starting off in technically year two, I think that the third-party aspect of it is going to be there, because unlike the Wii U, and even more than the Wii, the third parties can say, we could put our games on this console and people will buy it for the right reasons, which is why titles like Shovel Knight and Fast Remix and SteamWorld Dig 2 are some of the best indie game sellers, and all these indie game companies are saying, oh my gosh, our Switch sales are through the roof,
right?
Because people, for whatever reason, I still don't understand this, but for whatever reason, Switch gamers, they just want to play games.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that sounds like a foreign concept, but it's really not, okay? It's like, we're playing the main games, we're playing third-party games, which is why Rabbids was sold over 1 million copies and some others are getting close. And, you know, the indie games are selling like crazy. The developers are seeing this, and they're seeing how Nintendo is devoting their time to this. And that's why we're getting a Dark Souls port. That's why we're getting Octopath Traveler. That's why we're getting Phoenix Wright on Switch and Yo-Kai Watch and maybe the next Ni No Kuni and all these things. Because they're seeing that the gamers love the Switch. And that will always bring games to the table.
So. Again, the basic message of Nintendo, again, is always has been about the experience and fun.
Yes.
And that's kind of the thing that's always what they've been doing greatly so far. Again, leave luck to heaven. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But when they get a hit, they get a hit. And again, the Switch is the hits. We are getting the games. We have the sales. We have the coming titles that's going to be, seems I'd be promising or not. There is that possibility. But again, what they've shown so far is, again, if it works, it works. If the people want to if there's enough demand and they bring it over and the people want this game, they will buy this game and will support it. I mean, heck, again, look at the games that XC just released it right now that's going to be coming for the Switch. And of course, like SNK, like other titles. I mean, it's just these titles that from the third parties that's coming to the Switch. It shows that there is demand. And...
Oh, Shin Megami Tensei 5. That's an exclusive for you,
and that's also coming as well. As I said, it's an exclusive. You're right. So like, there there are people going to be coming for this game, for the games they want on the Switch, and they will support it. So as long as they continue, like, as we stated many times over, to listen to the fans, the feedback, and Reggie says, clearly states he listens to the feedback.
So, and yet we don't have Mother 3.
So, yeah, as long as you listen to, as Nintendo listens to the feedback and helps with the third parties to publish, like, the certain games, but also keeps as exclusive, they will be in a good spot. So, as long as they continue to listen, which they should.
Yeah.
Yeah, they will be in a good spot with the third party support.
And then, of course, we got E3 coming up, which you know that there's going to be at least one or two big third party announcements there. So, what they are, we have no idea. Fighters! seriously, where's my Dragon Ball FighterZ?
I have a feeling that probably will be an announcement in E3.
You know what I want? I want Injustice 2. Yeah. Like, so it's weird because you guys all saw the new Starfire images, right? Like, that's pretty not good.
No!
It's pretty bad. But that actually made me think, like, man, I really wanted to play her in Injustice 2, and I never got to.
Okay, to be clear, like, I know that those were technically, like, behind the scenes everything, and that's why I'm not freaking out about Beast Boy and Raven. Because they were clearly not, like, on camera.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm sure they're going to paint Beast Boy's face green and pale up Raven. There is no excuse for Starfire.
No, she's bad.
Even if I was to excuse the dress as something casual, let's just be hypothetical here. Yeah. And let's just say that, like, Beast Boy, her face wasn't painted yet. That hair is inexcusable.
Yeah.
Okay. Raven has red straight hair. It has always been red straight hair. There's been only one time it's been curly, and it was never that curly. Stop messing with my Starfire. Okay.
Right. Free Starfire.
Stop messing with my Starfire. Okay. But yeah, I would love to see Injustice 2, too. yeah, there's a lot of potential, and we hopefully will be getting some big announcements soon. I mean, we've already got some big ones because, again, Dark Souls.
Yeah, you know your boy just pre-ordered Dark Souls, Donkey Kong, Captain Toad, Mario Tennis Aces, and Octopath Traveler Special Edition.
Yep,
so that was a cool $60 of pre-orders. But yeah.
So we'll keep our eyes open. Obviously, when more third-party news like we'll have with Level 5 or XSEED or anything else comes out, we'll let you know. Okay. So with that, we are ending this episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. Tyler, poll question.
Right, quickly, NEP, click on it. I was blowing it. Yes. Which Mario Sports franchise would you most like to see come to Nintendo Switch? 50% said Mario Strikers. That was the number one option. Mario Baseball in second with 33%, and Mario Hoops, 17%. Nobody voted for Mario Golf, which is an outrage. Mario Golf is amazing.
I'm actually surprised by that.
Well, again, it's a golf Mario game golf? And all that. I could see the not a major appeal, but again, yeah. And that's actually what I've been meaning to bring up as well, because during the end of the Splatfest results, like, Marino said, we'll get him next time, Strikers.
There you go. All right, so next week's poll question, let's just base it right off the topic we just did. If the PS5 and the Xbox One X2 come out, should Nintendo try and upgrade the Switch?
Yeah, how about we put the solutions that we talked about as options? What would you like to see Nintendo do most?
Yeah, okay, how should if the PS5 and Xbox One X2 come out, how should Nintendo respond? A, do nothing, Switch is fine on its own. B, upgrade the Switch in graphical capacity. C, offer an evolved Switch, aka new system. Or D, other. Explain in comments.
Yep, got it.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued to see what people think about this one. So vote in that poll. Let us know what you think. And, of course, let us know what you think about all the other topics we talked about. What do you think about the Octo Expansion collectibles? Did you buy Shovel Knight? Were you part of the 2 million? I was! I was part of the Switch. What do you think about Yo-Kai Watch 4? And do you hope that Level 5 reveals some new titles for the Switch soon? What do you think about the Fae updates? What Bethesda has said? You know, how great is that Mithra figure looking? Anything, let's talk with us and let's have some fun. And of course, join us next episode. We're going to have a lot more fun and might have a very interesting topic for you. We'll just have to see. So, for Tellius Tyler and Warrior Will, ladies and gentlemen, I am Todd Black and we are out of time. We are not out of lives. We've made it to the end of the level. So, raise the flag.